You have to have three keys to get Jeremiah on a podcast. You have to text him, you have to ask him in the Skype chat, and then you have to publicly shame him to get on the podcast. You don't.
I really feel like there's probably some sort of summoning technique that we're missing out on here. Like, we draw a circle in chalk and put, like, Born to Run and Psycho Pomp and, like, some banana bread in it, and Jeremiah will appear.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Indie Heads Podcast. I'm your host, Maddie, a.k.a. at Monrovian Prince. On this week's podcast, we have...
Hey, guys, I'm the Big Kahuna, a.k.a. Orange Schmorange.
And I'm the Little Kahuna at J-Wall.
Oh, yeah, baby.
I am, I guess that makes me the Medium Kahuna. I'm... Waffle113.
And missing in action is our dear boy Jeremiah 03 King, who may or may not be here later. We'll find out.
We literally don't know.
We don't know. We've texted him. We've called him out in the Skype. We have not publicly shamed him just yet, which I think is the third key to get him on the podcast. You have to have three keys to get Jeremiah on a podcast. You have to text him, you have to ask him in the Skype chat, and then you have to publicly shame him to get on the podcast.
I really feel like there's probably some sort of summoning technique that we're missing out on here. Like, we draw a circle in chalk and put, like, Born to Run and Psycho Pomp and, like, some banana bread in it, and Jeremiah will appear.
We have to put Steve McQueen in. Steve McQueen is also a very important...
It's true, yeah.
It depends on the time. The three things, it depends on where Jeremiah is at in his life at the moment.
Well, I think it's more just, like, the time of day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you can't put Born to Run, you can't put that, like, at midnight. Actually, no, Born to Run's one of those, you can put that on, like, any time. So I don't even know. Well, hey, what's up, everybody? How's everybody?
I'm swell.
It's fine this week. Things are bad.
It's real bad. We're not going to talk about the elephant in the room, because...
No.
Who? No, we're not going to talk about him, okay? Not yet. Probably not at all.
I think pointing out the elephant in the room was a deep mistake.
Well, speaking of elephants in the room, Boards of Canada, there's some elephants in the room. Their debut album, Music Has the Right to Children, turned 20 on 420 this year, which is, that fucking owns, dude. Like, that's tight. That's super tight. I think it was that another record turned, like, 20 on 420. That was, like, a very, like, oh, of course that record came out on 420.
I first listened to this album 6 years ago. When I was...
I think it was Mezzanine.
What?
Yeah, it was Massive Attack. Yeah. Like, what were we saying, Alex?
I first listened to this album 6 years ago when I was 17, after getting into Radiohead and especially falling in love with Kid A. I was just, like, listening to it on YouTube and was really into it. It was just really nice, like, sitting in the sunroom in my parents' house at night doing some fairly harmless homework for a class I liked. And eventually I was like, damn, this is pretty fucking great. And I decided to read the YouTube comments. It was mostly, like, the same YouTube comments from fans on music stuff that you see on every video, peppered with, like, a few greatest album of all times, until I finally got to a comment that discussed in detail how this person believed that this album was dedicated to and focused on the worship of Satan. And it really freaked out impressions of teenage me, and I have not listened to it since.
But do you know why?
I don't remember at all. It's something like there's some backwards vocal shit, and like there's a secret pentagram on the cover that's not actually there. I don't know. It was
nice.
All things considered, they picked the wrong Boards of Canada album. If you're looking for satanic conspiracy theories, GeoGaddy is right there.
I mean, it's called GeoDaddy, after all, and who's the biggest GeoDaddy of the entire world?
Oh my god.
Satan himself is the GeoDaddy of the entire world,
wow.
Right? All right, we live in Geo Hell, so obviously,
Geo Daddy. This is not where I thought the podcast was headed.
See, Zach knows where I'm at. He knows where I'm at.
Folks. Wait, I do?
I don't know. Hey, speaking of old ass motherfuckers, my buddy Valentine, they got two EPs pegged for a summer 18, summer 19, or spring 19 release. That's right, baby. My buddy Valentine, they're back again. The vacuum, it's come to haunt our dreams once again. The magical guitar vacuum.
I'm excited for these EPs. I low-key think that they could put out another genre-defining shoegaze album just based off of, like, the really unique direction they were headed in on MBV, which was really just a transitional album that so happened to be also incredible. I don't know. I'm excited, folks. I'm hyped. I've heard album is coming, but he wanted to do these EPs first.
Boom.
Our next topic of news is that Parquet Courts performed in Ellen.
I don't know why. I put this down.
I think it's fantastic.
I think it's great. It's like it's just bizarre, you know. Like,
yeah.
I hate those fucking, like, as of late, those dumbass tweets are like, oh, the simulation's breaking, and it's like, this is like, okay, these people, they have a point, maybe, like, but at the same time, this is not even out of ordinary for Ellen. Like, Ellen's also had like savages on her show before, which is like really bizarre. I think in some ways more bizarre than Parquet Courts.
Pentagon if you perform these walls.
Oh yeah, that too.
That's more like. Well, I don't know. That one makes more sense to me because Kendrick is like a huge artist making like very serious music that like it's really easy to co-sign. But for me, Parquet Courts performing on Ellen is a fever dream with a happy ending. And I don't know, I don't like how negative people are about it. I don't think it's, like, reasonable at all to say that they're selling out. Wide Awake is really weird. It's a weird-ass song, and it's certainly a weird song to perform on Ellen DeGeneres' show.
It's like...
And honestly...
It's like a parody of, like, Feel It Still, in a way, you know? It's like that type of song. Like, it feels like a parody of car commercial music. It goes way over the top on some stuff. Like, the group vocals are, like... It feels like they're all being, like... They're recording these vocals while at gunpoint. Which is really kind of interesting to me. I like the song. I still agree with Alicia Chris's take that it's I love this new LCD Sound System song.
I get that. I think, like... I don't know, the whole thing actually felt very Parquet Courts to me, because it was just really jarring and almost felt like performance art. Like, the forced audience dancing was iconic and weirdly alienating. Because you can tell these people have been, like, instructed to move around like that, and that they aren't actually that into what's happening on stage. Mm-hmm. And it's just, mm-hmm. It was really funny.
Oh boy. But, Zach. All right. Okay. So Zach put something on the schedule at the last minute. He told us to give him 90 seconds. So Zach, here's your 90 seconds of freedom. Go with whatever the fuck this is.
Oh boy. Hey, because I want to talk about part of it a bit more later. But it was announced a few days ago that adaptation of Anais Mitchell's beautiful album Hades Town is going to be getting a premiere on
Zach. You're cutting.
Really excited for it because
cutting it in and out for me.
Christ Almighty, God.
Hey, don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it, Zach. Don't say the trade upward.
I'm not gonna. But yeah, like I was trying to say. There's a musical adaptation of Anais Mitchell's album Hades Town, and it's really beautiful, and it's going to debut on Broadway next year, and I'm really excited for it, because that means there's a non-zero chance that Anais Mitchell could be a Tony winner next year, and she will deserve it, because her show is amazing. That's all.
Boom.
Okay.
Alrighty. And our final bit of news, which is kind of news, kind of not. It's just an article that I saw the other day that I really want to talk about. Because, hey, guys, did you know that I work at an alternative radio station? College radio station? Did you guys know this? But this is actually a really interesting article that came out on Billboard the other day with the title being, hang on a second, I gotta pull up the article. Hey, women are dominating alternative rock, so why aren't they dominating alternative radio? And it is a very interesting sort of state of things of alternative radio, because basically the gist of the article is like, hey, there's like no women on this chart, bro. Like, what's up with that? What's up with that? And really, just...
I wonder. And couldn't be like patriarchy or something like that. That just sounds fake to me.
No, they just don't make good enough music, Alex. That's obvious.
Yeah, it's women just need to step up to the plate. Come on.
But okay, but let's get serious though. This article is very enlightening. It's very enlightening and definitely like very true to my experience in alternative radio. Just being like. A big part of this article, pay attention to this shit, was the paragraph or two about Grimes, about how they tried pushing her to radio, they tried pushing California to radio, and it was basically just promoters being, like, super confused, being like, what's with these videos? Who is she? She's weird. Why is she dressed like that? What's with those, with the little white eyes? Basically nothing about the music, and that's kind of been my experience of, like, bringing women artists into my college radio station, has been, like, almost every time, without fail, someone has been like, oh, did you bring this in because she's a cute alternative chick? Or something of that sort?
Yeesh.
It's not fun. It really is not fun.
Can we give a big fuck you to the head Grammy guy also, just while we're on this? Because I repeated his comments earlier in jest, but, like, that was some fucking shit that he said, and I wanted to punch him.
Yeah, it was, ugh. But another thing this article talks about is just the disconnect between alternative radio and just, like, what else is happening and sort of what usually would be considered alternative. Like, there are certain bands that are, like, I'm going to go to the Billboard charts, like, right now, and I'm gonna just list off some artists, and you guys just tell me if you've ever heard of them. So, let me...
All right, yeah.
Let me get the chart right now. We're going to go from just... I'm going to start with a list off random bands. Have you heard of Lovely the Band?
No.
Okay, AWOL Nation.
Yes.
Vaguely, yeah.
Sir Sly.
No.
What?
Dirty Heads.
Yes.
No.
AJR.
Is this a bit where you're making these names up and, like...
No. No, these are all real
bands. These are all real bands. Okay, what about Judah and the Lion? Have you guys heard of Judah and the Lion?
Yeah.
That is vaguely familiar, like...
That's depressing. Judah and the Lion fucking suck. That's my word. what about Robert DeLong?
Maybe...
I feel that like I'm just thinking it's familiar because of Tom DeLonge, and I actually don't.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay, three more, just for the sake. Nothing But Thieves.
Yes. No.
Kinda, yeah.
Jukebox the Ghost.
No.
Oh my god, all these weird Portugal the Man ripoff names, even though Portugal the Man is one of the worst band names ever, like, what the fuck?
But again, seriously, look at all this. It is just like a completely different world. If you really only follow like music blogs and whatnot, not even just Pitchfork, just like a lot of different like blogs in that sphere, like Spin, Stereo Gum, Tiny Mixtapes, stuff of that sort, you would read this chart and go, who the fuck are any of these bands? Like, you maybe like heard them in passing on the radio one time, but like by name, you're not gonna see most of these bands mentioned in any of the blogs, and it just seems like there's a huge disconnect between like what's going on in music journalism right now and then like what's happening here. And generally the article does talk about how basically it's just pretty much a boys club when it comes to alternative radio. And that's because the audience is still like, it's mainly white older dudes, as And it's mainly alternative radio at this point. It's mainly based off of older music. Like, I think about half of their playlists generally are like older stuff, stuff that's like more than 2 years old. And a lot of it's still dudes. Like, there's a quote, let me pull it up really quick, from, I want to say, I'm trying to figure out, I have to go back a little bit to who said it. I think basically a program director at an AAA station in New York City basically said, like, hey, they don't play Alanis Morissette, they don't play Garbage, they don't play Fiona Apple. Like, these are alternative mainstays, but, you know, they're still playing Pearl Jam, Nirvana, and Soundgarden, but not, like, those previous mainstays who are still, like, who are just as big in the alternative scene at the time, but, like, now it's just, like,
yeah,
completely just their influence is kind of swept away.
Garbage has bangers, and it's bullshit I don't hear them anymore.
Yeah.
But
especially when Pearl Jam sucks.
Did you see that tweet that I retweeted the other day? Like, anxiety, depression, Pearl Jam guy.
Yeah, I did. That's some good shit right there.
Boy. But the whole thing is just, like, the alternative songs chart is just really sad. Because, I mean, this article is just, the thing that I keep having to think about is just, like, oh, like, women can't get, they just can't really experiment when it comes to, like, when if they want to get on radio, they can't really experiment. Like, is either you get the complaint, oh, it's just, like, it's maybe just not us. Or it's, like, oh, it's too poppy, it's too obscure, and all this shit, and it's, like, and it just, it there's just such a, like, a high bar.
They all
just
boil down to... Oh no, this woman is expressing herself.
Hey, he ain't lying. That's how it is. So it's really fucking annoying. Like, I brought Angel Olsen in 2 years ago, and I was told that she sounds like a local artist that isn't quite there yet.
Like, that's so bullshit.
What the fuck?
I remember that.
It's bad, folks, alright? If you're wondering why I regret my field of study in some ways, because, fuck, man, sucks. It's garbage. But it's
piss balls.
It's a bunch of piss balls. But that'll do it for news. We're now going into... we have two kind of main topics. We have a big one and a little one, as we have our little April catch-up, as we promised, because we talked about a couple albums. We mentioned in the last podcast we want to talk about a couple albums a bit more in depth that we didn't get a chance to on the last one, because either they weren't out yet, or they had just come out, like, that day. We just kind of need more time with them. So, start off, the new Unknown Mortal Orchestra album, Sex and Food. Fourth album for Unknown Mortal Orchestra, project of
Ruben Nielsen.
Nielsen, yeah.
Thank you. Ruben Nielsen, his solo band project, which this time around, actually, I think he was working with his brother, like, a lot on this album, as they used to be in a band back in New Zealand when he lived there before he moved to Portland and kind of left the music business behind, but then got back into it because Bandcamp became a thing. And isn't that crazy? Going into this album, actually, Alex, I'll let you start. What were your thoughts kind of going into the album, and then, like, the thoughts on the album itself?
Sure. I was worried about this album because of Ruben's kind of pretentious and, like, often infuriating Twitter presence and the name, and also because of the first single, American Guilt. You know how when, like, jazz or classic rock guitar dudes play a really virtuosic solo or, like, a particularly fancy riff, and they get this, like, facial expression where it simultaneously looks like they're having an earth-shattering orgasm and are in some sort of deep pain? When I heard American Guilt for the first time, I could see in my mind quite plainly Ruben making that face while he recorded this song in the studio, and just, like, how impressed he was with himself when he finished it, which kind of ruined the whole vibe for me. And I was also just absolutely not ready to listen to Ruben talk about America after suffering through his edgy Twitter politics for a couple of months. But in the context of the album, American Guilt absolutely hits, and so does everything else.
Yeah, I've got to agree. Again, I was not a fan of American Guilt when it came out. I was like, I don't know about this, but I think like after we did the podcast where we talked about it on Single Alert, I listened to it again. I was like, oh, this fucking shreds. This is great.
Yeah, like in the context of the album, I wasn't like, this is a corny guitar solo type deal. I was like, oh shit, that's rad.
Also, Honeybee is like,
yeah,
not even a huge
Honeybee is the sleekest thing he's ever produced. It's so nice.
And there's other singles. There was like Not in Love or Just High, which I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is not a single. Like, this sounds like an album cut. And it was just like super. It was super slow. It took like 3 minutes to build to something, and then once it did, ended. But Everyone X Crazy Nowadays was actually pretty decent, and kind of a bit of a throwback to Multi Love. And I think in general, this album is sort of a mixture of his first two albums and then Multi Love. Like, it's still keeping some of the more funk influences, but adding a bit more psych to the mix this time.
And I also noticed it's pretty lo-fi, like, because his first couple albums were obviously that. Kind of production style was very prominent, but Multi-Love felt a lot more polished, and this kind of, I feel like, went back in that lo-fi area.
I still think it's like, I also feel like it's a distinct progression too, though, also. Like, it's not just like a throwback, like, this does feel new for him.
Mm-hmm. And also with Multi-Love, it goes without talk, I feel like with Multi-Love, you kind of have to talk about the narrative a little bit. Like, what the album's actually about, which, there's a great Pitchfork feature, about, that Ruminant interview, basically going over the entire history of, like, what led up to the album. The basic gist is that, he met, someone on tour in Japan. They sort of exchanged numbers and kind of talked on and off for a few months, and stuff was kind of building romantically. His wife found out, started talking to the woman. Then they started kind of getting involved a bit more romantically, and then eventually decide, hey, let's do this. Entered a polygamous relationship that had its ups and downs, and kind of had to end because of immigration and visa issues, and sort of the emotional landmine of a polygamous relationship kind of very much informed the lyrical content of Multi-Love. But this time around, it seems like it's him taking a step back. It's sort of, I described it on Twitter as being like Oz trying to get back inside the curtain a little bit of like, you know, you have Ruben who basically kind of bared his soul, like, hey, like some very, like very innate personal details about his life. And is now like trying to get back within the curtain being like, you guys, again, I don't want you knowing anything about me. Like as a person, like I want you to keep things as low key as possible. And I think it makes it sound
apt.
Very deep, very, interesting, compelling. Like in a different way than Multi-Love was compelling. It's just him trying to kind of bring his personal life back into the personal, but being like, hey dude, like,
yeah,
I know way too much about you at this point. Like, it's sort of hard for you to kind of go back to where you were before this, as this like kind of mysterious figure, you know? So that makes Sex and Food really compelling to me, is that sort of the mystique has been kind of lost and he's trying to find it back again. And I think it's that for me, that's kind of like the more lo-fi production this time around is like him being a bit more purposely obfuscating himself to try to build that mystique back.
His vocals are like pretty far back in the mix on a lot of these songs too, and like very mumbly, and I think that was intentional. And he did talk extensively in an interview about how he grew to really hate how much Multi-Love was tied to the narrative of him being in this polyamorous relationship, and how he just kind of wanted to be like just like an artist playing songs again. So that was an apt assessment.
Mm-hmm. But this album, it bangs. It does bang.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
It bangs. There's sometimes a slight complaint that's not a big one, as it does work in some ways. There's some stuff on the sound that's a bit too tease-worthy, like Ministry of Alienation, that horn that comes in at the end, like that fucking loud-ass, like, whoa, shit, this song's about to go somewhere, and then it just kind of ends and goes into Honeybee, and you're like, oh, what the fuck? Like, I got blue-ballsed by this.
But then Honeybee is the greatest
then Honeybee
song
comes
of all
in.
Time.
Then Honeybee comes in, and you're like, okay, I'm not mad. I can't be too mad about this.
Just a consummate experience.
And then also just there's some like really nice like song transitions, like Chronos Feast to His Children to American Guild. It's just like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah, for sure. Should we move on to the next album?
Yes, next album. I think I've said my word. It's a very good album. I would rank it very high on my album of the year list so far. It's really grown on me a ton since my first listen, so check it out. Alex,
your album is one of those rare albums where the latter half of it actually far surpasses the opening half, and it ends with two of the most satisfying, enjoyable, dynamic songs I've heard all year. Her vocal performances throughout the record are really emotive, unique, vital, and, energizing.
I don't think we've mentioned it yet, by the way, but this album is Bark Your Head Off, Dog by Hop Along.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. We're just looking at the schedule and talking about a record that you don't know we're talking about. Oops. yeah. Bark Your Head Off, Dog. Great album. The lyrics are simple and digestible, but communicate complicated things. And it's good.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of my favorite albums of the year so far. I've been generally aware of Hop Along without ever actually having listened to them before. And based on what I knew about them, I was expecting this album to be a little more rough around the edges and a little more emo, which in 99 out of 100 scenarios would be disappointing to me, but this album just does so many other interesting things in the kind of framework of indie rock that I don't care. It's just, I don't know, a lot of really cool stuff going on, like you were saying, Alex, with the kind of sharp and poignant lyrics. But I don't know, I like the orchestral kind of element to the album. It's like chamber pop almost at some points, especially in the last couple of tracks. And Not Able is the song of the year.
The production on this record is really incredible. It's really well done.
Yes,
I don't feel like I've totally digested it and fallen in love with it yet, but I'd be really hard pressed to say anything bad about the record. It's just, it's really good.
It's a grower. It's definitely a grower.
For sure.
This is my first time listening to Hop Along, at least a Hop Along album in full. I think I've heard some songs here and there. Her voice, it takes some time to digest a little bit, just because it does. She's very expressive, very, very expressive, more expressive than most singers. With every line, every word, it just feels like she's putting some different annotation into everything. And it's a lot to take in, because you're just like, goddamn. But once you get used to it, once you kind of go, oh, this is how she sings, you go, oh, this is great, I love this. And it adds more cadence to some of the lines on this album. We were covering each other's snot in my childhood bed. That line, just from a reading, you go, oh, damn. But from her singing, you're just like, god damn. Fuck. I've been there. I've been there. God damn. There's a lot of times in this album you're just like, god damn, I've been there.
Yeah. It's definitely a very, millennial relatable album. It's not even necessarily a millennial thing. I just mean, I feel like with the outlook of it, I don't know.
Mm. So, and I think is that it? Do we have any more to say?
Yeah, I'm all set.
I still need more time to digest it. I think we all still need more time to digest it.
You should listen to it. It's definitely a slow burn, but it's good. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Up next, I just want to briefly mention it. The new Heinz album, I Don't Run. Fairly decent indie rock record.
It bangs.
It does.
Yeah.
I really like the singles a lot, and I feel like I'm mentioning this mainly for Lily, because I know Lily was really into the singles and ended up being pretty into the album. So I just want to mention it, because I'm pretty into the album, too. It's very good. I'm kind of pissed I missed them live, as they, came through St. Louis, a day or two after I listened to, one of the new singles, and I was like, fuck. This close. But definitely worth a listen. I will recommend
it. Also, shouts out to Spain. Gotta like Spanish music.
Oh, yeah. Our former Spain resident, Jake, is in the
Spaniard.
House.
Spaniard.
Spain, a.k.a. I became a Fleet Foxes member in this very important time of my life in Spain. Next up on the list, I won't mention it. It was, again, the new Amon Dunes album, Freedom. I think it was on here because Pat was supposed to be on this podcast, and he's been really into that album. But I can't really get into it. Are you into it, Jake?
I can vouch for this album.
I put it on the schedule because I saw you were listening to it and thought you had something to say about it, but it appears you don't. So
I was mainly listening to it because I thought Pat was going to be on the podcast, so I was listening to it for him. But I fell asleep, like, halfway through the album because I was a real tired boy today, so... I keep trying to get into this album. I really like the first half, but like once it gets to the second half, it kind of loses me a little bit. So
I can vote for it in the sense that I think it kind of eschews a lot of the more like conventional singer-songwriter stuff that it's kind of like a contemporary with. Like, I think it's a pretty unique combo of like folk music and psychedelic music and Americana. And I think it's kind of cohesive and diverse, and it sounds like it'd be really good to listen to on a road trip.
Yep. That's pretty apt. And then I guess last mention, another quick shout out I want to give before we get into our main, the new Jean Grey and Quell Chris album, Everything's Fine. This is just a fantastic rap record. A little long, but there's just some really incredible production here. Quell Chris and Jean Grey, they're both very good rappers who know how to do the good raps and stuff, and Gold Purple Orange is a very high song of the year candidate for me. That song is fucking incredible. But yeah, just want to mention that real quick. I need to give it more listens, but again, it's kind of long, so it's just like me finding time to do it. But there's a Hannibal Buress feature on here, and it's fucking hilarious. And yeah, like
there's a Hannibal Buress feature.
Yeah, he's on one of the songs.
Excellent.
Yeah, again, I would listen to it. If you're into any of the mellow music group stuff, like, you know, Open Mike Eagle and whatnot, like, you'll probably be into this record. It's got some really great production. And yeah. Are we ready? I think we're ready.
Are we ready?
Oh boy. Yes. So back in October we did a very special episode called Take or Treat, where we asked you guys for your hottest takes, and we decided if they were a trick or a take or a treat. Take being it's hot take. Treat being it's not that hot of a take. And this time around, we are doing Infinity Takes in honor of the new superhero movie. It's with all the superheroes from all the franchises and stuff. So
yeah, that one.
What's gonna be our metric for this one? We should discuss this before the podcast. But what's gonna be our metric? Since we had take or treat, we had take or treat.
Oh what, yeah.
Let's just do good take, bad take. We don't need a gimmick or anything.
All right, fine. Okay. We'll do this. We'll do three categories: spicy take, salty take, and sweet take. Spicy take is obviously
hottest of takes.
Salty take is it's kind of hot, but not really. Like, and then sweet take is like, I agree with this. So.
You're right. Okay.
I think hopefully you guys understand. If not, you'll figure it out once we go over some of these takes. So first up, friend of the podcast, Sarah Lobig, at Sarah Lobig on Twitter. I've never heard of Radiohead.
Me neither.
I don't know how to assess this take.
It's just an attack on me and people like me. And Sarah said this exclusively to provoke, and I won't have it. I am insulted.
Okay, yeah. There we go. Next take, let's do this. Friend of the podcast, Jacob, at Fix Your Heart or Die on Twitter. Curious by the Voids is better than the entire Strokes discography.
Now, yeah, so I have some things to say about this take.
Me too.
Because, get the fuck out of here.
I like...
Oh, sorry, oops.
No, you're fine.
Zach!
Oh, no!
My bad. He's out of here.
Get out of here. You've betrayed the chart.
Legally cannot say fuck.
You're going to jail now, Zach. All right,
we have to put Zach in jail.
So, yeah. Zach is in metaphorical jail for the rest of this.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway. We can't.
Curious by... It's greater sign the entire Strokes discography. If I can almost respect the take the Voids are better than the Strokes, although I don't necessarily agree with it. I at least kind of understand where it's coming from. But how, to say that the one song, Curious, that individual track alone is better than the entire discography of really any band, but especially the Strokes, I'm going to say that's a spicy take. I'm not taking it.
I have, like, I resent this take for two reasons. Like, Curious is cool and interesting, but it's no human human sadness. Sorry, I'm thinking about Parquet Courts. And two is that it has, like, absolutely none of the emotional power of any of the ennui slappers on This Is It. And yeah, that's my piece. It's a spicy take for sure, but I'm not a fan.
This is a sweet take for me. I kind of agree with it, but I think it's mainly because I've not really listened to a Strokes album.
Have you even listened to Is This It yet, Maddie?
No, I have not, and I'm never going to. despite everybody on the podcast, I will never listen to Is This It. And I really like Curious a lot, so I kind of have to agree with this take, mainly just because I respect it. I respect it because I like Curious a lot, and I like that someone agrees with me that it's a fucking amazing, great song. But I can't confidently agree with it. But I like it. All right, it's provocative. All right, it lights a fire in me that I don't fully understand, but I enjoy. Zach. We're gonna let Zach out of jail. We're gonna give him a get out jail free card this one time, so we can debate the take. Zach, is this a spicy take? Is this a sweet take? Is it a salty take?
Can I say salty if it makes me upset?
I mean, spicy is the hottest take. Salty is like, this is understandable, but it's still pretty hot.
Oh, yeah. Salt, yeah, spicy, the middle spicy take. It's just no. Like a Twitter user, fix your heart or die. Like, you're good people, but this is just a very, very wrong take. Like, I'm sorry, man. I just can't.
Sorry, Jacob. Again, these people, they don't understand. All right, they don't understand you. I understand you. I understand where you're coming from. Next take from KRJ757 on Twitter. The suburbs. Hang on, it's in all caps. The suburbs.
The suburbs. The suburbs, eh?
The suburbs was Arcade Fire's worst album, and it's not even close.
I think this is a fascinating take because it suggests a deep, true love of everything now, and I can't get in the way of a love like that. I think it's a sweet take.
Vehement hatred of the suburbs.
I mean, the fact that it says it's not even close. Like, that's like, okay, like, my dude, everything now. I understand. Again, AJ is probably like loving. Well, actually, no. AJ probably is very deeply upset. This take.
AJ agrees with this take. Yeah, like, actually, he does. AJ thinks The Suburbs is the worst Arcade Fire album.
Wait, but jeez, the same our AJ.
Yeah, our AJ.
The same AJ.
Yeah, I mean, he.
Same agent that made a playlist that's called Reflector, but it's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I would peg Reflector as his least.
No. He, like, AJ talked extensively about at Pitchfork about this, how, like, he loves The Suburbs, but it is his least favorite Arcade Fire album. Or at least he thinks there's, like, an argument to be made that it is the worst one.
I will say, yeah, I'd say with that, it's definitely a salty take. It's like, it's a little hot, but it's understandable how someone could reach the conclusion. So, are we ready for the next take?
Yeah.
All right, next take.
Like some cheap.
I also asked this on Reddit, too, along with Twitter, to get a nice field of responses. And from username Hey Good Job on Indie Heads, Cursey Headrest would be much better with a different singer. I like unconventional vocalists, but I just find his voice painfully uninteresting, and it's a real obstacle to me enjoying their tunes. This is a spicy take. This is spicy. I mean, it's somewhere, it's between spicy and salty. It's that I kind of understand where he's coming from, but it's like, I fucking love Will Toledo a lot, very unconventionally. So I want to fight this guy to the death.
I strongly disagree with how he feels about Will Toledo, but I just, like, I understand the sentiment. So I'm going to say it's a salty take.
I will say it's a salty take as well, but not because, like, I'm with you too, that I can understand thinking his voice is uninteresting maybe, but I don't think car seat headers would necessarily be better with a different singer.
Yeah.
Will Toledo's voice kind of is too perfect for.
Yeah. Will Toledo is car seat headrest.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's the thing.
It just does not compute with.
Yeah.
Zach,
I guess we're going to give it. Yeah, I guess this is going to be a sweep. It's a salty take. Like, I get it. I understand why you would come to that conclusion. But at the same time, I listen to, like, John Darnielle and Tom Waits. I'm good with unconventional sounding voices. And like you guys said, I think Will's voice really fits what he's going for. So I get it, but I don't really agree.
See, my man's out here. He's not having emotional breakdowns to hide a death. He doesn't understand, all right? He doesn't understand. Next take. Next take from our boy.
May I introduce this one?
Zach, yes, go ahead. From our boy.
Yeah, this could be a bit weird, but my take is that Hadestown, which I talked about a little bit earlier, is the best thing that Justin Vernon has ever been involved with. And I'll let you guys go first before I defend it, so go ahead.
I don't know what Hadestown is, but... I
go off king, but I don't really but go off king.
But yeah, go off king. Justin Vernon sucks.
Here's the thing. I like Justin Vernon in small doses, like the stuff he does with that guy who we're not talking about. Cast, I like it, but. I could just never really get into his albums. Like, I heard a few songs from the self-titled, and it just wasn't for me. But here he is, playing Orpheus in this, like, adaptation of the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, and I just find it really works. His multi-tracked harmony stuff actually connected with me for once, and I just think... I think it's the best realization of his talents, weird as that may sound.
All right.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I love Forema Forever Go, but yeah, go off King. I think this is a sweet take.
I'll go with sweet too because it's Zach. Yeah. And I love our boy. But I will support him.
Sweetie boy.
I will support him.
Like, listen to it, Jake. I feel like he especially would love it.
I was going to say, I don't really have a take because I have also not seen Hadestown, so I'm equipped to kind of rate it, but I'll say it's a sweet take for you.
There we go. It is the sweetest take so far in this list. Beat that, boys. Beat that, boys and girls. Next up, RobMa56. He says, Michigan is a far better album than Illinois.
I entertain often that Illinois isn't the best Sufjan album, and the desolation of Michigan is intoxicating, but I can't agree with this. I don't know. I'll support it. I think it's a salty take.
I would put this take in between salty and sweet. So, like, I guess just regular. Like, it tastes like rice. Because I think I agree that I think Michigan is better than Illinois, but I think it's really close. I don't think Michigan is far better than Illinois. And I feel like they're similar albums in many ways. And I think I can understand Michigan edging it out. I think it's a little more kind of personal and I don't know. If you're in a more somber, wintry, desolate, I can definitely understand it.
Michigan was kind of the Illinois prototype in a lot of ways, like, just in terms of, like, what he does on those two albums. But they're definitely, like, unique documents. Like, separate from each other. My favorite Sufjan album is Seven Swans.
That is a sweet take.
My big mood. Big mood. I'm not familiar enough with either album to make a judgment call. I listen to songs from Illinois more regularly, so I guess I'm gonna go with Salty, but I can understand it. Like, I get it, but come on, it's Illinois.
Yeah, I stand with Salty. It's understandable, but I very much disagree. Because
like,
Illinois
it's not
is incredible.
Far better.
And Illinois is my garbage, shithole, corrupt state, but I love it very dearly, so Illinois will always be my favorite. And there's a song about the town I live in. Like, that's cool. The Great Godfrey Maze? I live, like, a mile from that. That's tight. Alright, from podcast member Gavin, a.k.a. at 490freak on Twitter, ska. Baby, that's one damn good music genre. And this is another sweet take right here. I feel like Gavin, by the end of the year, is going to unironically get us all into ska music by the end of the year. I feel like that was his point of his infiltration of the Indie Heads podcast, has been, I'm going to get every single one of these bastards into ska. First, I will meme it to death. Then I will sincerely get everyone into ska. And then three, I will turn the Indie Heads podcast into the Ska Heads podcast and take over and storm the offices of alternative press and take it over. So it's a sweet take.
The joke's on you, Gavin, because Sublime's self-titled album was stuck in my car stereo for a year.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Christ. Alex.
More than a sweet take, I think this is a sound of three trumpets above gang vocals take. That's my stance.
My sister really liked Real Big Fish when she was younger. That's all I have to say.
Also, shouts out to the one Jeff Rosenstock ska song on the Worry, like, it's like one of the tracks. I think it's like June 21st, maybe. I can't remember. One of those is a ska song.
It's on the medley. Right. It's on the medley.
Yeah, it's on the
medley. Let's please talk about this real quick. Jeff Rosenstock played ska music at the Cool Kids Pitchfork Music Festival last year. Like, like, that's an accomplishment. Like, that's a huge achievement in life. All right. Yes. Oh, it's my take. Oh, hey, my turn. I put a take out there. I've listened to a lot of Ugly Mane recently, and I'm very confident in saying that he is the best hip hop artist of this generation.
That's a spicy take.
Yeah, that's a spicy take.
Now we need to listen to Mistathug Isolation.
I can't counter it that well, because I really am not that familiar with Lil Uzi.
Yeah, same.
I'm just thinking of other artists with whom I am familiar that are preventing me from calling this anything but spicy.
Yeah.
Y'all don't understand, alright? I gotta send y'all to the essence, dogs. All right, but I've been listening to a lot of Lil Wayne recently, and he's so good. All right, he's fucking so good. All right, he's incredible. I very much recommend him, but he is one of those artists that I will maybe get one or two people into the podcast shut into, but because I don't, despite being the host of the podcast, I don't hold that much influence over what we listen to all that much. Shockingly enough. Like,
again, I think Jeremiah holds the most recommendation clout, but it's just because he, like spams and memes all his albums so fucking much that it's just unavoidable.
Yeah, again, it's very worthy of discussion that AJ and Jeremiah meme Psychopomp to the top of our Album of the Year list in 2016. Like, they really
I helped, hey. Hey,
you did help, but
I was there in the fucking trenches when we were making our year end of the year list, pushing us to actually cheat the vote and put Psychopomp as number one instead of number two.
You were, but did you write the Album of the Year write-up? Did you write that?
No, I absolutely did not.
So
I actually have like three comments in there, and I'm proud of that fact.
I think there's a random comment in there. Like, there's like a random comment that like Arthi was like, "Did you know that your name is like an anagram for this?" Or does anyone remember what she said? I gotta find it, but
and she just got caught up in the wave for a second.
Jesus Christ. Okay, okay, next take.
Shouts out Arthi. Come back on the podcast, please.
Please.
We need you.
It's been like 2 years now. She was at Pitchfork last year. I didn't even see her at Pitchfork last year. I was like the only person that didn't.
Once or twice.
I was like the only person that didn't like get to meet her last year. But anyways, hey. Next take from AllMoneyCorholio on Reddit. It's got two takes, actually. The first take is that everything that Fleet Foxes has put out is better than Helplessness Blues, though it's still a pretty good album. I don't understand this take, so Jake, you are the expert here.
It's not even a spicy take, it's just wrong. It's just an incorrect take. I mean,
like,
I don't know.
Let's put it this way, the wording of this take presupposes that the Fleet Foxes EP from like 2006 is...
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It's not.
Yeah, and also, I don't know. It's hard for me to... I just like, Helplessness Blues to me is way too perfect that... Especially considering that I feel like Helplessness Blues is just an improvement on their self-titled album in pretty much every possible aspect and every front that you could consider, that I don't really understand thinking about it the other way around, because they're similar in a lot of ways sonically and structurally, but Helplessness Blues is just, the only difference is that it's just better. So spicy take.
Yeah, I'm a fairly recent convert to the Church of Helplessness Blues. I only recently decided, yeah, this is better than the self-titled. And to see a take like this is just not good. Just, it's very spicy. I don't like it.
I will concede, however, that all of Fleet Fox's material is good, so I do respect that he did put the kind of footnote that it is still a pretty good album. So at least
which is a cowardly move.
The other two albums are good, but yes,
that's a cowardly move. If you're gonna go for a take like that, go all the way. Don't like
that's also true.
Don't qualify
it's a,
it.
It's a bad take, and you're a coward.
Yes.
All right.
The second take, which is much spicier. Twin Fantasy is super overrated. Some parts of it are pretty cool. Other parts sound like I'm 14 and this is deep material. Now, this is a really spicy take because
it's almost a sweet take.
Because, it's like close but no potato.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm 14 and this is deep is the point of the album. Except it's more like I'm 19 and this is deep and it's also actually deep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's spicy, because it's like, as Jake said, it's close but no potato. It's like, you're this close to understanding, like, why people like this album, alright? It's an album about adolescence, and how fucking confusing and awful it is. And the screams, alright? He speaks to me with the screams, alright? Will Toledo, he speaks to me. But this is a very spicy take, in my opinion.
Yeah, the alternate universe version of Monsters, Inc., where it's just Will Toledo screaming in a room.
Oh, God. All right. Hey,
Bad take.
I hate this take more than anything else on this list. This take so much. I hate this take with a deep fucking passion.
What is the take, Alex?
U/KevinJP64 says that Vampire Weekend is boring, and he's fucking wrong. Vampire Weekend is honestly, like, Vampire Weekend might be my favorite band right now. I return to the self-titled and Modern Vampires so often. I return to Contra a whole lot too, just like a little bit less lately. I honestly, like, Ezra is maybe the most engaging lyricist around right now for me, and vocalist, and like Ezra and Rostam as a songwriting duo just absolutely, like, fucking kill it. And I know he's not going to be on the next album, but the next album's still going to be fucking great. Well, he's also, he is going to be on the next album, just not in, like, the same capacity. But it's still going to be fucking great. I love Vampire Weekend to death. They aren't boring. This is not a spicy take. It's something beyond that. This is a lava take. I don't know. I don't know what this take is. This take is some sort of, like, cruelty, and I don't want to think about it anymore.
It's like those videos of those people who try to eat the peppers that are really spicy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. This is a Carolina Reaper take.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay. Next take. From friend of the podcast, Ted, aka at Tad Phillip on Twitter. Strawberry Jam is the best Animal Collective album. This is a cotton candy take. It is the best.
Yeah.
It is the best Animal Collective album. Like,
most certainly.
Cuckoo Very Cuckoo sense. Is the best song they've ever made. That's my opinion.
That's another good take.
I like Peacebone.
Peacebone's good.
Strawberry Jam is still probably like in my top like 4 or 5 albums ever. So it's ever.
Strawberry Jam is freaking good.
I miss Deacon. I miss the Deacon. Where's Deacon at? Can we get Deacon album number 2 or Deacon?
Oh, can we? My take is that Deacon's solo album is like way 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 better than anything any of the other members of Animal Collective have done in the past decade. Basically, since Meriwether Post Pavilion, I think Sleep Cycle is like just like a masterpiece.
I'm mostly in agreement with the take. I like it a lot. I like Eucalyptus a lot. Like, I think Eucalyptus is great. Down there suffers from like just the intro track being like too good. You know, like Laughing Hieroglyphic is too good. It's too good of a song that the rest of the album kind of suffers in comparison. But it's still a good album. But I like Eucalyptus a bit more. It's a bit more. It's everything. The goodness is spaced out a bit better. But. Next take. Bonus take
wants to discuss my take.
Oh yeah.
Just
sorry.
A quick thing, not to be that guy, but Panda Bear versus the Grim Reaper does exist. I know Jeremiah has my back on this, and Jeremiah's support is all I need.
See, no album can like immediately soothe me and calm me and make me feel peace while also making me like confront emotions that are difficult like Sleep Cycle does. It's a fucking good album.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Our next take is at Jeff Rosenstock with with 2 ska songs on New Arcade Fire, just saying.
He's right. I think this is a very
very sweet take. I love this take. I feel very good about this take.
Yeah, like, they're back-to-back, too. There's no denying this. This is... There are 2 ska songs on everything now.
What songs? What songs are the ska songs? Is it Infinite Content?
Yep. Peter Pan and Chemistry, right?
Yeah! Okay, this is a sweet take. I agree with this take. Jeff's right.
Yeah, he's 100% correct!
Yeah, Jeff, he's in the right. Of course he is. He's Jeff. I'm seeing him this Sunday. I'm gonna cry. Hey, next take from Peppersmith, right on the podcast. What?
I was just, he didn't actually like tweet that at us, did we? Did he?
No,
he
no, just, like, no, no, Ted,
no. We just took that.
Okay, that's what I thought.
No, Ted. Sure. You know, Ted sent
oh,
that.
Oh God, can you imagine?
Ted sent it in to us, and we're like,
I'm a fan of the Indie Heads podcast.
Well, I feel like we don't acknowledge ever that like apparently one of the members of Portugal the Man is a fan of this podcast.
Will Toledo's fan.
Well, Toledo's a fan of the podcast. He slid in our DMs. All right? He vouched for us. He vouched for Andrew to get on the podcast. Like, he publicly subtweeted us. All right? Like, that's a big time. That's a big time. But, okay, at Peppersmith667, indie music, indie with quotation marks because edgy, indie music has been a steady has been in a steady decline since the 2000s, and this is I want to say it's between salty and spicy, or not? No, it's between salty and sweet. It's in that middle line for me.
It's complicated. Like I think it's just inherently wrong, but it's also kind of right in a way. Like I don't feel like we've gotten as many like indie masterpieces this decade, but like indie as a genre has just expanded so much, and we have gotten so many great records from like a really diverse group of artists. And I think that's really great, and I think the genre is actually thriving right now. But I would say that we like haven't like seen as many like the Glow Part 2s, you know, like the Moon in Antarctica, like albums like that, which are just like, you know, like full stop perfect.
Mm-hmm. Although,
so I guess it's kind of a salty take. I'm neither here nor there on it.
I can't say too much just because it's like I got into indie music in the 2010s and I haven't really explored the 2000s all that much when it comes to indie music. So I can't really like, I don't have a good frame of reference for this take. Just because I do like a lot of music, and like my favorite album of all time came out in 2013, so I can't fully agree with this take. So I'm gonna go salty on this take. That's my final answer.
Okay.
Next take from at framing the pick. Maladroit is a top 5 Weezer album. This might not be a difficult take. This is just dumb. Like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, dude, but this is dumb.
It's an extremely low bar. Because there are only four good Weezer albums, and Maladroit is one of them. Like, what's that fifth album, though? That's what I'm wondering. What is that fifth album?
What are we thinking here? Blue, Pinkerton, Maladroit, then probably what are the other two? Like,
Everything Will Be Alright, or, like, the Red Album, or Green Album. But, like, all of those are kind of bad choices in their own unique way.
Yeah. Too sweet.
Yeah, like, Framing the Pick is cool. I like them. They have great Twitter stuff, but this is sort of a low bar take. It's sweet, but only because there's not much to it.
It's dumb, and you should feel bad because, again, think about it, bro. Like, think about it. Just think about it, man. Again, there's only four, at best, good Weezer albums. So, pal, I need more info about this. Like, I need you to explain this a bit more in depth. This is wild. Next, speaking of wild, this is a wild take. And
Where is Jeremiah? This is the Jeremiah take.
Shut your eyes and say Dan Behar in the mirror 10 times.
Oh boy. At Grant Baker, his take is that Father John Misty is the most consistently good indie artist of the past 5 years. And I'm going to go with spicy. This is a spicy take, all right? Because Fear Fun is an okay album. It's fine.
Fear Fun is a fantastic album. I Love You, Honey Bear is a fantastic album. Pure Comedy is a good album. I like, this is... It's so controversial, it's stupid, but, like, I really don't see that album as, like, a political album. I know he, like, talks about politics, but that's not what those songs are about. They're just about, like, him being a human in this world, feeling scared and anxious and, like, worried about people. And it's very genuine and very empathetic, and, like, he clearly cares a whole fucking lot, and I don't think it's really all that pretentious, despite it using pretentious language. And that's my piece on it, and that's kind of how Jeremiah feels, too. We've talked about this a lot in the past couple of weeks, although Jeremiah would have more positive things to say about it.
This is really, again, Jeremiah, if you're listening, this is really the perfect time for you to hop in. So please, get in your time machine, all right? Get the pentagram together. Get the necessary albums and the banana bread, and please arrive. We've done everything but publicly shame you to get on this podcast, and it's time. But
if we lock a nude picture of George Michael into a closet, I'm pretty sure he'll appear.
What?
Okay. Next. Okay. Next.
Yeah,
take.
But keeping your comedy out of it, because I am starting to feel bad that all of my, I do is like shit on it because Jeremiah clearly loves it. Was Spear Fun 2012 or 2013? Because that affects things.
I think it was 12.
It was 12.
Oh yeah. Like I'm sorry, I wanted to give this take a chance, but I'm gonna have to go spicy here. I'm sorry. Like Honey Bear is great. Like I said, not going to say much about pure comedy, but I actually do kind of like the new single, so hopefully God's Favorite Customer will be a step back in the right direction.
There you have it.
I don't agree with this take, but I can respect it, mostly. Mm-hmm. See, in my opinion, Joanna Newsom is the most consistently good indie artist of the past 5 years. I know she only put out one album, but that's all she fucking needs.
The last 5 years.
That's all she fucking needs, though.
It's true, yeah.
Divers is good enough for 8 albums. Mm. Joanna could put out, like, 8 shitters in, like, a few years, and I would still be a huge fan. Mm-hmm. But she won't, because she's fucking Joanna Newsom, and she hasn't put out a bad song, let alone a bad record.
Yeah, that implies she can make bad music.
Yeah.
All right, next take. Alex, you got a take for us. What's this take?
I do?
Yeah, you do.
Oh, yes. See, this would be more fun if Jeremiah was on, because he shares this opinion. My very controversial take is that Minecraft is very fun. My explanation of this is that I played Minecraft a lot when I was a teenager. And I spent a lot of time working on this one world, and I just got it extracted from my desktop computer on my laptop, and I've been exploring it, and it's a blast. And yeah. That's my indie music take for the day, folks.
I will agree with your take, because I think I've played it within the last, like, few months, pretty much for the same reason, into it as a in my younger years, and I like re-downloaded it a few months ago, and still fun, still holds up.
Uh-huh. I'm gonna go salty take, because I never got into it, but I can respect it, so yeah, salty take.
I want to say salty at this point, just because I played a lot of Minecraft to the point that it's kind of boring to me now, but at the
yeah.
Same, but
so you gotta play on a server with like people you're friends with to like really have the full proper great Minecraft experience. But mm-hmm. like, yeah.
See, I can't really like say that because I play so much Fortnite, and most of Fortnite is just running. It's just running in empty spaces of the map, and then maybe you'll find someone, and then you'll get killed, and then you'll get upset. So I can't really. I don't have much ground to speak on by calling Minecraft boring. So next take. The cute Longoria. Actually, we're coming to. Oh wait, never mind. I thought we were coming to a close, and we got a couple more left. We got actually a couple. Oh boy. Okay. Cute Longoria.
We can blast through
a couple of these. The new Twin Fantasy is slightly disappointing because the guitar sounds on Teens of Denial were huge and amazing, and the guitar sounds on Twin Fantasy are thin and bland.
Yeah,
this is very spicy.
This take doesn't make sense. Clearly, they're not listening to the right album.
Yeah,
I think we should move on.
I can see in a vacuum both of these things being true separately, but put together they are not. So, spicy.
Yeah, no.
It's very spicy. Twin Fantasy in stores now. Next take.
Keep moving.
From RC Crisp on Reddit, Pavement isn't that much better than their fellow critical darlings from the 90s that have mostly been forgotten, like Sebado, Archers of Loaf, and the Lemonheads. So I'm gonna go off the bat and say this is a spicy take, because if you're wondering why Pavement is why they're a bit more critically acclaimed in the modern age, is that they don't have dumb names like Sebado, Archers of Loaf, and the Lemonheads. Pavement is a good band name, and that's why they've endured, because the band name doesn't suck and it isn't like a 90s. It's a 90s name in the best way possible. It's aged like fine wine. Sebado, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. Archers of Loaf.
Sebadoa, maybe? No, Sebado. I don't know.
Archers of Loaf is just, it's so 90s it hurts. And then the Lemonheads is also just like really 90s. But the lemon flavor ice cubes, like the chewing gum, is really good. Like the icebreaker stuff, it's really good. It's my favorite gum. But yeah, this is a spicy take. But also, I've never listened to Sebado, Archers of Loaf, and the Lemonheads, so I don't have much ground to speak on, other than I vaguely
recall listening to one Archers of Loaf song and being bored. But Pavement's a great band. I can't comment on this take, but Pavement is a great band.
Next take, but he had another take in that R&B is currently the most interesting and boundary-pushing genre. Oh, Zach, did you want to say something about the first take?
No, I want to say something about this one. I actually really agree with it. Like,
yeah,
you got guys like Frank Ocean and Janelle Monáe pushing the forefront, and you have the old guard like Maxwell, D'Angelo holding things down. There's a lot of advancement there. Like, I like a lot of what's happening in R&B right now. So I think this is a sweet take.
Oh, wait, I didn't even get to fully finish what this take was, because I thought you were still wanting to talk about Pavement. The full take is R&B is currently the most interesting and boundary-pushing genre at the moment. And I would say, I don't know enough, but I want to probably say sweet, because he probably knows more than I do about it. Because there really has been a lot of boundary-pushing music that's been made by R&B artists. Like, FKA Twigs, again, is very much a boundary pusher. Frank Ocean goes without saying, like, for someone who basically kind of got his start as an R&B artist, then makes Blonde, and it's like, holy shit, like, there's nothing that sounds like this. And I don't know if there will be for a while. So, I will go sweet. It's a very agreeable take. Although, salty for certain white dudes on the internet, so...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, to me, Blonde is like the most boundary pushing album we've heard in a long time, so like, yeah. I think this is definitely a sweet take. I like this take.
Would you guys consider Clarence Clarity R&B at all? I'm thinking of like
a little bit. I guess
you could. Yeah,
I think just because of the Justin Timberlake influence and whatnot, just that whole sort of, you know, I mean, the whole mid 2000s, early 2000s pop was very inspired by R&B. So I feel like he kind of counts.
I have a fresh take. Man of the Woods is a boundary pushing R&B album.
Ooh. Alex, get off the podcast.
No, I'm not saying it's a good album. I'm not saying it's a good kind of boundary pushing, but I think it's assuredly a boundary pushing R&B. It's
pushing
album.
The boundaries in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Sure. Fine. We'll go with that. Fine. Next take. From @GiantMagicPerCopter. I don't fucking know. Get a better name, dude.
Giant Magic Theater? I don't know.
Maybe. Thank you for the save. Monastic Living was the last good Parquet Courts project. This is a very spicy take. This is an outlandish take. Because Human Performance came out like right after Monastic Living, and it's fucking great. So this is spicy as hell.
Human Performance is the secret best rock album of the decade. Of this half of the decade. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that, because Twin Fantasy. Like, It's a really fucking great album. The lyrics on that album are so complicated and so good and just blah, 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 blah. It's great. I'll fight you. It's great. Next take.
Leon, I don't know. Pacifier is Young Thug's best song so far, and Little B's best project is PYT, Pretty Young Thug, and his best song is Hoop Life. This is a succession of takes.
Yeah.
So first take, the Young Thug tape take is my answer is no, because the best Young Thug song is With That.
Good Time.
I say Good Time is them. Good. What, is it? It's either With Them
it's
or With That.
Them.
Okay,
it's
with
them.
I do not like Young Thug very much. I still don't. The critical acclaim he's gotten over the years, it boggles my mind a lot that he's sort of the one that critics sort of gravitate towards a lot. And it's just like, I don't explain, please. But yeah, it's a spicy take. Obi's best project is POT. I would say Zach. Sorry, Zach, go ahead.
I think the best Young Thug is I Know There's Gonna Be Good Times.
Yeah, totally fair.
Yeah.
Sweet. I disagree with it because I think my favorite Young Thug song is Wyclef's Jean. But I would like to say that the first time I heard Pacifier, I didn't know who was by, so I described it to my brother who was playing it as like the song with the guy getting tortured in the background.
Oh boy. Little B.
I haven't heard the song, but
Little B.
I think Maddie's cutting off.
Am I cutting off?
No, you're back.
I'm here. Hey, and it's gonna register my mic anyways because I'm the one recording. Little B's best project is PYT, Pretty Young Thug. This is salty, I guess. It's not my favorite, but it's one of the only ones I've listened to in full, so it's a good tape, I think. But like most Little B tapes, it's very long, but that's sort of the charm of the whole thing. Is that they're almost all Little B tapes are excessively long, but you know, that's the charm. And his best song being Hoop Life is I don't think I've heard of Hoop Life. But also here's the thing, but by saying Hoop Life, you imply that the best song on Hoop Life is not Fuck KD, and so it's a spicy take for me.
The Hoop Life is a funny way of spelling turned me cold. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah. Next up on the list, we have three more.
What's the Lil B song where he cries in the video and is just saying, talking about how much he loves everything? Because that's definitely my favorite Lil B song.
I think it's just called I Love You. I don't...
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I was like, nah.
I'm pretty sure it's on the Godfather tape. Let me check that. While I check that, we'll discuss this next tape. It is just I Love You. From username JCB3939, Loveless is the worst of the Shoegaze Big Three albums by a considerable margin. I have no opinion on this take because, I don't, what are the Big Three? I don't know.
It's Loveless, it's Souvlaki, and it's Nowhere by Ride.
Yeah.
I have no opinion on this take because Loveless is the only one I've listened to. So, no. That's my opinion.
I've heard all of them.
Yeah.
I love Loveless to death. I never really got into the other two.
I'll say it's salty just because I don't think Loveless is the worst of the three, but I think it's the most different of the three. The other two are more dream pop, whereas Loveless is just like straight shoegaze. So I can understand someone who's more into dream pop holding that opinion, although I don't agree with it.
I think Loveless is definitely the most important one.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't even know what shoegaze is. Let's just move on.
Mm. Next. From username Mighty Projet. 1986 is almost as important a music year as 1967 and maybe more important than 1991.
This is a very specific take.
My dude, what are you talking about? What the fuck are you talking about, dude? What even came out in 1986?
Well, So I have this. So you got The Queen is Dead, Master of Puppets, Graceland by
Graceland.
Paul Simon. Yeah. There's a Nick Cave album.
When did Songs from the Big Chair come out? I feel like that was 1984.
I think it was 84.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
When did Hats come out?
Anyway, what came out in 1967? That's so...
Well, I know what album did not come out in 1967. Smile by the Beach Boys. Smiley Smile came out instead, which was sort of the scraps of Smile.
Sgt. Pepper's came out in 67.
This gave
Are
me
You Experienced, Velvet Underground, and Nico.
Forever Changes Forever. By Love is the best of the big four psychedelic pop albums in the 60s, being like Pet Sounds, Sgt. Pepper's, Love Forever Changes, and The Zombie, Odyssey and Oracle.
That's personally my favorite of the big psych albums from the 60s is The Eraser by Thom Yorke.
Whoa.
Good take.
Maybe the spiciest take on this list, I think.
final take.
Whoa. Sasha thinks that's a sweet take.
The sweetest take. All the takes.
I strongly appreciate that. Thank you.
our final take of the night from front of the podcast, Marty at Marty Bix. Being into indie music is just a way of hiding no personality. Guys, we gotta shut down the podcast. Our whole we gotta shut it down. We've been exposed. Our whole shindig. It's just we've been caught. It's over, guys.
Man.
This will be the last episode of the.
You know that GIF. I can't remember what the clip is from. I know it's a show I've seen, but it's like it's just like the Pitchfork offices, and they're like, "Oh,
it's
that's
Portlandia.
It. We're done. Yeah, Pitchfork is done. Yeah, Portlandia. That's right."
So yeah, this is thanks for exposing us, David.
Let's just sign off.
I think this is a weird take, though. Like. In general, and I don't really understand it because like I just don't.
All right, I think that'll do it. Like I said, serious finale of the NDS podcast for a variety of reasons. Obviously, we got a really mean comment the other day. Someone saying that my podcast sucks, and so just a lot of things built up to this.
I
being
feel like
serious
we get
finale.
One of those a day.
We do. We probably any time that I comment on Indie Heads, like if I get myself into any kind of drama or any kind of controversy, it's just there's going to be your podcast sucks, and it's like, yeah, great, I know. Like, we wouldn't do it if we thought we were good at this. Honestly, like if we were good
our
at this.
Threads on the subreddit,
this.
Like half the time they're just people being like, half the time they're people like. Oh, thank you guys for still doing this. Just wanted to say I'm a fan. And then the other half the time, it's like 10 different people ganging up on us.
Don't stop being mean. All right, it's not cool. It's not cool. It's not cool at all.
I mean, but to be fair, we've trashed the subreddit numerous times on this show.
Oh yeah, but, of course. Which is weird, I guess, because we've had. Because there's a number of us that are still, like, fairly involved in the subreddit. Like, obviously, me. Zach still does FYC. Dylan still does, is like, starting to put out, like, a monthly, like, electronic music thread. We all still, I think most of us still write for FYC or still comment in some capacity.
Yeah, I guess I do that. I don't comment or post anything anymore.
Also, calling out a very specific group of folks, we've had a very like
we've had actual influence
on the subreddit. Like
we can actually
say like, oh, we started like memes and stuff. Like you could trace that back to us. But at this point, we're just going on a massive ego trip because this is the series finale. So please allow us to go on an ego trip.
This is the greatest podcast of all time.
It's the again. So
this is the great. this is the greatest Indie Heads podcast. We are recording live in Saudi Arabia. Little did you know.
hey, we can't.
That's my favorite take of the night.
Oh my god,
this is that's for
Zach. That take is for another podcast. All right, when we talk about the greatest Royal Rumble on the next episode of Slammy Harder Daddy.
Oh boy.
What do you guys think of Slammy Harder Daddy?
Can we just change the name of the actual main podcast to Slammy Harder Daddy, just on principle?
I agree.
We'll discuss it. All right, we'll internally discuss it. But hey, hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I don't know what's going to be the next one. Hopefully, the Billboard charts don't fucking suck, so we can actually do like a decent Billboard episode. And hopefully we can get the gang together and do some classic podcasts, like some classics.
Yeah.
The Born to Run podcast, we've been talking about for like 2 years.
Maddie, did you see the little Google calendar I put together?
You'll have to send it again, because it was probably, I think you probably sent it like when I was playing American Wasteland last night, so I wasn't like fully attentive to the chat.
I just did like a rough schedule based off of like what people seem to be interested in, and like... when it would make sense to do that.
See, we can actually plan stuff, guys, alright?
Yeah.
We got this.
We're trying to do better. We are.
We are aiming to be 1% less worse.
Yes.
Exactly. Boom. Alright, but I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. We will see y'all on the next one. And, bye. Oh, and we'll see you guys.
Have a great night.
Exactly, and Pitchfork, the wheels are turning for Pitchfork Music Festival, by the way. We are getting our Airbnb this week, so we actually never really did like a full-on discussion of the lineup, so...
I need to decide if I'm coming.
you haven't bought your ticket yet. Alex, come.
Yeah.
You gotta, again, we need you there, Alex, alright? We don't even deal with the festival, dude. We can just go, like, we can go around Chicago.
Yeah, like
the festival.
I didn't enjoy a day where we just like explored the area. Because the lineup is kind of weak.
It just depends on once the set times comes out. We can probably decide.
Sunday
is
important.
See, well, that's my issue. Is that this year Sunday is like my favorite day?
Yeah, there's some good stuff on Sunday. I feel like who's headlining on Friday?
Tame
Impala. Yeah, we can do. Friday we can go do some shit in Chicago. I do not want to sit through that.
I don't give a rat shit about seeing Tame Impala. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
I've enjoyed their songs a few times, but just like no.
Are there any Fleet Fox heads that are gonna be there with me? I'm looking at the
I'll be there.
I'm down to see them. Although I've already had the ideal Fleet Foxes festival experience by watching and listening to them from across the bay at the Newport Folk Fest. We found like a field where the wind was right for us to like get good sound from their set. And we just sat there and looked at them like tiny on the stage way far away. As well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. But for real though, bye guys. We'll see you on the next one. We got stuff. New podcast on the way. Alright. It's on the way.